Hello and welcome to Series 1 of the podcast The Heart of Teaching, produced by Hibernia College. My name is Aoife Lynham, teacher and researcher, and in this podcast I speak with educators from a variety of fields and ask them about the teachers who inspired them to get where they are today. So join us as we meet the inspirational for a little bit of inspiration. I'm delighted to welcome our guest, entrepreneur Laura Jordan from Style Savvy. Laura is a style and brand consultant and fashion presenter who's based in Dublin. She lectures in image consultancy, personal shopping and fashion styling at Dublin Institute of Design. She's a fashion presenter with Weekend AM on Virgin Media One. She holds style seminars and hosts retail and funding raising events. She also teaches style courses for groups and individuals and runs transition year programs. But on top of all of that, the multifaceted life of Laura Jordan also includes a qualification as a primary school teacher. So Laura is invited here today to tell us a little bit about her experience of teaching, but we also want to get some really good style savvy tips on how we can achieve a professional image within our career. So Laura is going to talk about these two areas today. Okay, Laura, thank you so much for joining us today. So I suppose to start off, would you be able to tell me a little bit about why you decided to become a teacher in the first place?
Sure. I think really it was the experience of being in school that I really, really enjoyed. I loved my primary school education. And I think it was when it came to career choice time, I was able to say, I know what it's like to be in a school. I wanted a job that gave me a certain amount of autonomy, which being a teacher does. You are in control of your own classroom. I was quite creative and I wanted a way to allow that be part of my job. Also in my family, my dad's a teacher, a lot of my relations are. I saw what a working teacher did, how their lifestyle was. I had the info and I think that made it an easier kind of progression for me to go into that area.
Okay. And was there something in particular about teaching that you loved when you became a teacher? Was there something that now you look back because you've moved into the business world, when you look back now, is there something that really sticks out for you?
Oh yeah, I think the job satisfaction is huge when you're working with young children. You are a huge role in their life, secondary to their parents. You have massive impact upon their daily life. And for that reason, you have a certain responsibility to ensure that that interaction is positive. If you are doing a good job, your students will adore you, quite honestly. And there is nothing quite like that, the self-esteem that comes from the adoration of young children, which is, it's a lovely thing. And that's where you get your job satisfaction, really, when they are so eager to share their successes with you.
Okay. And was there a teacher that you can remember that you loved like that, that you were like, oh, I want to be her or him?
Totally. And I had a teacher when I was in first class. I adored her. And I remember she gave me a teddy bear, which I kept, I'd say, till I was about 13, definitely way past the point where it was cool to have a teddy bear anyway. And she had a huge impact upon my confidence and my interest in art and English and subjects, which really became blossomed, for want of a better word, later on in my life. But I always remember her as being a key influence on me, and I adored going to school that year.
Mm-hmm. And was it just, what do you think it was about her? Was it that she made you feel a certain way, or do you think it was what she did in the classroom?
I think it was what she did. I had a feeling of being really safe. Okay. And I think that is a really important thing to put across to the children in your care. And I also remember what's sticking, I can remember the dresses she wore, which is no coincidence that I've moved into this job now. But I remember that feeling safe. I wanted to be her. Mm-hmm. She had an elegance and a warmth to her that I really, really respected. And it made me feel very calm.
Mm-hmm. That's lovely. And I think that's so vital for teachers listening, and particularly your student teachers, that you create that nice, calm, warm environment for students.
Definitely.
But I suppose while there's lots of positives that obviously both of us can take from primary school teaching, there, of course, there are going to be challenges along the way. Mm. And a big part of this podcast is taking the time to reflect on, you know, we're not all perfect and things don't always go perfectly.
Exactly.
And there are challenges along the way. Can you tell us about a time where maybe you had a specific challenge that you had to overcome as a teacher?
Sure. I think a lot of them centered around maybe a lack of parental support in the home. So you can have identified a child who has a need in an academic or an emotional or a social area, you can highlight that with a parent in a set, and it has to be done in a sensitive and an objective way. However, you, if you don't get the support and the row in of the parents, it's really hard. You take, you know, what's it, two steps forward, three steps back, or vice versa, you know, in terms of the progress of the child, that's frustrating. And you know what needs to be done, even if it's a small amount of reinforcement in the home. And if you don't have that, that child, it's just harder. It takes longer for a child to progress in whatever the area is, even more so when you're looking at behavioural or social issues, because you're not getting the support from home, and maybe the parents just are not in a position to really link in with this idea, this concept, or this difficulty. And I think that's hard.
And would you have any advice for student teachers about how do you overcome that, or how do you get, is there anything you did to enhance parental support?
I think the thing I started off by doing whenever I had a meeting of that nature is to say, look, we are in this together. And the thing I asked was, is this behaviour being exhibited at home? Before they answered, I say, because I really hope it is. When a child is showing consistent behaviour in different environments, it's so much easier to deal with than when you have oppositional behaviour. And if you say the child's being a bit difficult in school and they say, oh, an angel at home, that's really hard. If you have consistency, it's so much easier to deal with it. And when you feel like you've got the parents on side and they don't feel that they're coming into a lecture, that's half the battle. You say, you know, look, this has happened many times before. We will get through. We will work on this. Give the team concept. I always think that works a little bit better. It's less confrontational as well.
And I know that you've moved now into fashion and you have your own business with Style Savvy. And I suppose teaching is still a big element of what you do. And you go to initial teacher education institutes and you talk to teachers as well as other professionals. So I suppose for you, what do you think are the do's and don'ts for the professional image in teaching?
That is a good question, and it's an area which has been neglected in terms of professional image and personal branding, that whole concept. Corporates have prioritised it because they see their workforce as a reflection of the company and their brand. You as a professional teacher, you are a reflection of your own skill and competence in a school. The area that is grey is the fact that you need to be practically dressed because you are working with children. However, you also have to have a level of professionalism to what you're wearing. The key things is to look at your fabric. I'd avoid hoods if possible. I'd avoid rips. I'd avoid anything that when you bend over shows waist or shows anything at midriff, etc. And I hate that word, it makes you sound ancient, but it's that idea, you know, of when you remember you're working with kids, you've got to be able to bend and stretch and move. The official dress code, even though there isn't guidelines on it from the teaching council, etc., is a smart casual dress code, which means half tailoring. That means you either have a cut shoulder or collar and a more casual bottom half, be it a dark coloured pair of jeans, be it a pair of you know, more stretchy trousers, comfortable, movable fabric. Or you do the vice versa and you have a more relaxed top and a tailored bottom half. That's maybe a good guideline for teachers. It works both for men and women, half tailoring. So you have some sort of seams and cut and fit on either the top or bottom half of your look. Whereas if you're in a corporate environment, you must have full tailoring, which is on both sides of your look. And that's what I'd aim for an interview.
That's great, because we often say to our students, particularly when they're on their advanced school placement, because it's a 10-week block, that, you know, you're on an extended interview. So that image and that branding that you're talking about is so, so vital. And when it comes to social media, do you have any do's and don'ts for teachers?
This is, again, another area there isn't official guidelines on from the Teaching Council as a whole. Some schools will offer a little bit of guidance to their teachers, but typically it's addressed on a case-by-case basis. When a case arises, it's almost too late because you're going into troubleshoot mode. Typically, be careful that you're not too visible on social media. Every single teacher should have their timeline reviewed, turned on Facebook, should have their Instagram accounts set to private, should have as much of their other social media platforms as possible locked down. I think it's advisable on Facebook to maybe use the Gaeilge for your name so that it's not as easily searchable. A lot of teachers I know reverse their first and second name on Facebook so that they're not easily found, because particularly when you're teaching older classes, the children will be fascinated with finding out a little bit about your personal and your private life, and therefore you want to try and safeguard against that in as much as is possible.
Okay, great. And I know we talked before about, you know, future teachers and what kind of bit of advice would you have for them? So So if you were to look at what's happening with teachers at the moment, if you were able to make a change, or what advice would you give them?
Personally, when I think back and I look at, I suppose, the curriculum as a whole, I think there is a certain amount of a gap or a missing piece in terms of encouraging children to be creative thinkers, to critically analyse information, and to put forward their own ideas in a way that is structured. So we always encourage creative play, imagination. How do we move that along and not lose it as the children move through the later years of primary education, and let that then move into the likes of entrepreneurship? How do you teach children to be creative thinkers, to maybe be their own boss, to really look beyond a CAO form when they are choosing a career? It's interesting. I do a lot of work with transition year students, and I divide them according to the areas in which they wish to work in terms of what's appropriate to where. So we go through each area. So who wants to go into medicine? We chat about that. Who wants to go and work in education, in finance, etc. And I say, who wants to work in marketing and digital media? Nobody puts their hands up. Mm-hmm. And that begins in primary school, encouraging creative paths. That is, almost every company needs a digital marketing strategy. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest area of boom in our economy. And I think that needs to be addressed and looked at even from a young age. We look in like the geography textbooks, we look in the history books, like, yes, you don't change history, but I'm looking at learning off mountain ranges and rivers. And then you think, well, they could just look on Google Maps or, you know, mm-hmm. So looking at what is the future of education, I think, needs to be addressed in a small part, not mm-hmm. in a radical way, but in a small part in the early years of education.
Okay. And tell us about your journey, because obviously you spent a number of years as a primary school teacher and you've now like done a big change. Yes. Now, while there's still a big teaching element to what you do, tell us a little bit about, you didn't have that, I suppose, teaching of entrepreneurship. How did you learn it? How did you do it?
To be honest, I learnt on my feet. It was a highly stressful experience. I never intended to leave teaching. I loved it. I'm still passionate about education. I love fashion always. I decided that I would try and put a certification or qualification with my love. So I spent a summer training in the Dublin Institute of Design. I actually lecture there now, ironically. And I didn't, again, ever intend to do anything more with it, but to spend my holidays and my time off doing some personal shopping, doing some image consultancy, and really getting paid to shop for other people was something I hadn't considered, because when I look at it now, I think, wow, it's actually a dream scenario mm-hmm. for me. And it got to the point I was building it up, and I was turning down work. I was lying to people. I was saying, I'm sorry, I've got clients until 3 o'clock. My clients were the 7-year-olds I was teaching. So it came to the point where I was not really doing either job properly. Mm-hmm. And so I decided to take a year out from school. It was only ever really planned as a career break. And then I never went back.
Okay. And I suppose there are a lot of transferable skills that we have as teachers. And that's what our students are learning now on the programme. What kind of transferable skills do you think you brought to the role?
I think that's a great question, because people say to me, what prepared you for running your own business? And I say, teaching 35-year-olds. That's what did it. Huge number of skills. Persuasion. If you can persuade a child to do what you need them to do in a classroom setting, and we spend all of our day doing that, mm-hmm. you can persuade someone to book your services. If you can communicate effectively with difficult stakeholders in a child's life, be it parents, be it other people looking out for the welfare of a child, if you can communicate effectively with them and teamwork effectively with them, you can then communicate with others in business. I think that's really important. Public speaking is probably the one biggest asset. I am one of those weird humans that likes public speaking. A lot of my job involves it, whether it be TV or seminars, etc. And if you can stand up in front of a class of children, and I believe teachers are entertainers, mm-hmm. you entertain those children, you put on a show for 5 hours a day. If you can do that and you get familiar with it, it's massively informed for me the type of work that I do now.
Okay, brilliant. And looking back on your career within teaching, can you tell us about a time where you maybe felt that you made a difference in the life of a child?
I was thinking about this, and I suppose there isn't like one eureka moment, but what I've noticed even as a theme, and I'm imagining, I hope it's changed, but I imagine it's still a difficulty for teachers, is the aversion to maths. Mm-hmm. And I think because I struggle with maths, in school. Like, I was never a whiz. It did always take me longer to really get my head around, particularly those written word problems. You know, train one comes into the station. I used to really panic about those. But I remember the child I had who literally was, I mean, she had a phobia. I can't actually explain it in any other way. And I kept telling her, you know, you're great at maths. I mean, I don't know what the issue is there. And she was looking at me. It took months of reinforcement. I kept telling her she was doing second class maths. She wasn't. She was doing senior infant maths. She was in first class. And I was like, you know, this is second class maths. I just don't tell anyone. And it was that she was like, wow, really? And it was when her confidence came up and she believed she could do it and she could get on top of it, then so did the skills and the competency kind of followed along afterwards. And I think you catch kids being good. That's positive reinforcement will work 10 times better. I remember like being really, having to get really cross with the class, and I didn't know where, calling a child up with their homework journal. I thought they were getting a note home. That was something awful. And I just wrote in it, X child has done super work in school today. Well done. Mm-hmm. And I just said, had a really cross look on my face and handed it to her. And she went back and read it and beamed. But when you catch kids being good, send home good notes, positive reinforcement, so that it spreads to home as well. And I think that's really important.
Mm-hmm. That's really lovely. And actually, I think that's something that will resonate with a lot of people listening, and it's really simple as well.
Yeah.
It's not like you have to go and buy resources.
And the positivity, I think that's probably actually, I should have mentioned that when we talked previously. You have to be positive in your role. You are the child's life of multiplied by 30 for 5 hours a day. Mm-hmm. Even if you have personal problems, we've all bad days, and that's informed my business as well. You leave it at the door of the classroom and you are positive and happy and consistent when you're in the classroom, because the children deserve that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's informed my business now as well. I have to leave those issues. I can't bring them into my office with me or into a shopping appointment or a seminar or a meeting. And that's helpful as well, because you have to put on the show.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And if you had a magic wand, what would you like to see changed or developed? And I know you mentioned the entrepreneurship, but think about our student teachers. Like, what would you like to see for them, maybe at initial teacher education, or anything you'd like to see developed?
I think the spiral curriculum concept, which you've seen in some areas, and I'm sure it's been further developed since I've been in the classrooms, I think is really helpful to... But there maybe if there was a little more flexibility to allow student teachers and teachers to really go forward and push their passion.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's okay if you have a really talented musician as a teacher, they should be allowed, put some time aside to share that passion with their students. Of course, out of a class of 30, maybe 10 will be really engaged. That's a great statistic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you have teachers who are passionate about art, if you have a teacher who's a whiz at maths, I'd love to be able to teach sixth class how to do some form of tax return. Like, that would be brilliant. But, you know, that concept to really bring in, to look at social media platforms, to encourage, like I see some schools doing Scratch, and brilliant, you know, because I was joking with friends recently. I said, my children will learn how to code and they'll learn Chinese because that's where the future is. And I sometimes have a concern when I look, and again, it's only a general observation from a distance at the education sector, that we need to be thinking forward, because if we don't plan now for the future, we're expecting third level to do too much work in terms of educating and upskilling to the level of where tech and industry is. And if you have a teacher who's interested in that, brilliant. You know, let that be developed so that the children can get that spark at a young age.
And I think that's the beauty of teaching, that you can bring your passion and your interests, and every teacher brings something different, and every teacher can be unique in that way to bring that passion and creativity.
Exactly.
Can you think back to your own teaching practice?
Yes.
What was that experience like for you?
It's tiring. I remember, I actually remember it being so relieved because I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
You can't ever tell until you get into a classroom. And I remember I learned more in a classroom when we did them in 3 week blocks than I'd learned in 3 months in college. Now, college was super. I loved every minute of it. Made great friends, had great teachers, had great lectures. But the experience of A, liking what I was doing, B, learning how to organize myself, because if you can do teaching practice, you can teach with your eyes closed in terms of the resources you need, the planning you must put in place, the evaluations you do during your course of it, and, you know, writing of your lesson plans, etc. Mm-hmm. But I think that was a key learning time. But don't put pressure on yourself when you make a mistake. We all made mistakes. We all had howlers in the classroom, and you learn much more from them than you will from sitting in a lecture room or listening to content.
Mm-hmm. And what would be a piece of advice that you, if you could give three pieces of advice to a student teacher who's who's going out and teaching practice in terms of dress code, in terms of how they present themselves, and in terms of maybe organisation, because I know you're incredibly organised to do the job that you do. What would that piece of advice be?
I think it's the key one is to go into your teaching practice and see it as a 3-week or however long it is interview. Mm-hmm. Make an effort to get to know the teachers in the school, because you want to be memorable. You want that name when you apply for that to that school potentially down the line to be visible and to know, wow, yeah, I remember that girl. I remember she sat down and chatted to me about how my weekend was and all this. And that can be hard to do, to do the networking in a school when you're under a bit of pressure social media wise, mm-hmm. in terms of planning, mm-hmm. when you're under pressure to get your work done, to get to get the next lesson ready. You think, oh, the last thing I want to do is go to the staff room and chat. That's actually really important. In terms of organisation, a lot of that needs to be done before you even go near a classroom. I prepare a lot of my work before I go into a meeting. It has to be done. You have your templates, your photo, everything ready long before you'll need them. Even if it's having all of the documents set up on your laptop, ready to type the content in for your lesson plans. What can be copy and pasted? Can you have separate folders up and running, ready to go? And plan as much as you can in advance and see it as a battle to be planned and organised. In terms of your presentation, that is the case of thinking on a Sunday night, what are the 5 outfits I'll be able to pull together for this week? And again, it's the forward prep. Can you consider, as soon as you learn what dates your teaching practice are going to be, what season will it be? What clothes I've already got? What bits do I need to buy to fill in the gaps? It is forward planning. And it does mean ruling out and sacrificing things like your social life, like watching Netflix and having lovely relaxed evenings. Mm-hmm. But when you invest for those 10 initial block, however long it is, 10 weeks, etc., you get all those things mm-hmm. set up. Your strategies then are ready for the next time you have your placement.
And if I was kind of to start out, just say my wardrobe is in chaos mm-hmm. and I'm really nervous, I'm going to a school, mm-hmm. where would you tell me to start? What piece of advice would you give me in terms of where to go, anywhere?
I think High Street is the best option, and I go for good value High Street, because you're working with children and the clothes are going to get dirty potentially, it's a practical job. You can't be Primark, to be fair. Dunn's superb as well. You need to look at your capsule numbers for the girls. You want the 12 pieces, so a coat, 2 jackets, 3 bottoms, either trousers or skirts, and 6 tops. If you are that works really well. Alternatively, you can go and buy 8 dresses and just mm-hmm. rotate them. Change mm-hmm. your accessories, change your shoes, change your jacket you wear with them, and off you go. But I would buy good value, and I would buy relatively regularly rather than investment pieces for work. When you're working with children, it's just too hard to do that, because a bit of paint,
that's very sensible.
a permanent marker mm-hmm. Is actually hard to get. Never mind the usuals of the froob that goes everywhere, mm-hmm. the op that spills. But I would spend, I'd spend little and often. I think that works better for the teaching wardrobe. Useful.
And for men, what would you advise?
Similarly with men, you need to have your uniform. So chinos or casual tailored trousers,
no
with
hoodies.
A shirt, not a hoodie inside, no logos. No logos are brand, like our very visible branding, mm-hmm. No slogan t-shirts. And another thing, no runners that you can wear to the gym. Mm-hmm. I say if you can put them on a treadmill, they shouldn't be in a classroom or work environment. So just have a slight distinction between that if you can, unless you're involved in sports and, practically need to edit that. But again, go High Street for those. Pieces. H&M, superb for menswear. Topman, excellent. Zara, very good as well. Marks and Spencers, across the board, mm-hmm. you probably can't beat it.
Okay, that's fantastic. Well, I suppose just before we finish up, is there anything that maybe you wanted, a piece of advice that you wanted to give to teachers, to student teachers, that maybe I didn't ask you about? Anything that you can think of?
I think it's really, if you can, and it's hard, easier said than done, and I don't mean to say don't get bogged down in the curriculum, but don't let the objectives of a curriculum dictate the content that you teach to the children. If you see you've captured their interest and imagination with a particular topic, run with it. Mm-hmm. Let them get to that end point. Let them see how far they can bring something. And sometimes the pressures of the assessment, which is rigorous, of the curriculum, which can be way heavy on teachers' shoulders. If you can at all, figure a way of giving some time to letting your skills and, more importantly, the children's flourish and develop, because you just don't know where that's going to take them in the future.
Brilliant. And it's obviously taken you somewhere very, very different and very special. So thank you very much for your time, Laura.
Thank you.